Warning, the following podcast may contain hiccups of a Tom Parry nature. Mm-hmm. Tom, I'm at attack. You're right there, Thomas.
I've got hiccups.
You have got hiccups.
I don't think it's ever happened in the history of the podcast before, ever.
I don't think it has. But
what are the chances right before?
Right before hiccups? We podcast. It's because you forced all that food down yourself. There we go. There's a hiccup. That's recorded forever in audio.
I had, we had sausage and mash for dinner this evening.
We did.
It's good.
It was. Thank you very much.
If I do say so myself.
You did. You did cook it. Thank you very much for that.
I cook it most weeks.
Sorry. You do. It is a regular Sunday evening treat. How have you been?
I've been all right. Yeah, keeping busy, playing a few games here and there. First stuff off the bat.
DJ Tom in the hazel.
Sorry about last week. I think we need to address this.
Well, I think it's less you that needs to apologise, rather me with my flailing arms.
And the promise of delivering one the next day.
Yeah, and then we just kind of didn't. No, sorry about that.
But then again, I wasn't really available to do it.
And I was plugging through playing Hammering Harry without a migraine, trying to complete that game, which I did, and posted a YouTube video of, which you can go check, Biographic, which actually also came a day late because for some reason, Premier wasn't playing ball there to upload it on a Saturday, which is unheard of in the history of Game Boy. Yeah, it was just one of those weeks, I think. What happened was
it was a slow games week, too.
In all fairness, you didn't lose the best podcast.
But we did. Record an entire podcast. It was only at the end that something happened.
Yeah, I flailed my arms in excitement over Majora's Mask, I believe. And in doing so, I caught the cable because we're in Denmark. My Zoom that we record this podcast on has a British plug. And so it was going to the wall behind us into a European adapter. Usually I have a British like multi-plug that goes to European adapter, which gives us a bit of slack on the cable. This week it would have meant pulling all of my cables in my room out a bit. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll just plug it into the wall. It'll be fine. And literally 48 minutes into the podcast, I waved my arm up and that caused my hand to catch the cable and excitedly throw the European adapter halfway across the room.
Yeah.
And we thought it was okay. I could still see that there was a 48-minute file on the Zoom. And I said, okay, we'll wrap it up. So the last 2 minutes of that podcast exist. Unfortunately, the first 48 minutes of it were corrupt as a result of the Zoom not doing the little color wheel thing it does after it records to set the file formatting straight. So apologies for that. It was my excitement over a lackluster podcast.
And we didn't really have too much else to talk about other than talk about what we'd already talked about, which wasn't that interesting, which was I play Bayonetta and I was getting quite far in the level and then I accidentally hit no. When given the choice to continue or not, I hit no by accident and I got annoyed. That was one of my few moments of playing games that last week.
Yeah, I complained about being ill. I said I completed
I was ill as well.
Danganronpa.
Oh yeah, that actually was a really interesting bit.
Yeah, it was. But alas, you've heard about it. And I guess the ending of that game is now spoiler-free for those who did, because I actually revealed the ending and talked about that, and I'm probably not going to on this week.
Tea. It's weird.
Wow, so is mine. We have two grey shades of tea. I guess it is probably in the spirit of releasing 50 Shades of Grey that we have grey tea. Yeah. Both of us very big fans of 50 Shades.
Is this why we're doing this? Because we talked about something other than games as well this week.
Well, yeah. Well,
we're talking about the release of 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, that big cultural event. No. Oh, I could say I did see Jupiter Descending and I would recommend not seeing that movie.
Really?
Yeah, not very good.
I saw Song of the Sea, which is an animated film. I even saw it in Danish and I can still recommend that.
Yeah, it was probably a better option.
And actually, this little thing to say about that is there were six people in the cinema.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's depressing.
And I think the crowds, there was crowds of children there because it was a Saturday morning. No, sorry, a Sunday morning at, yes, at the cinema. A lot of kids' films were on, Big Hero 6, for example. And I think that was what was...
I assume there will also be in Denmark, there is a franchise of movies called Far Till Fear, which is, always comes out around the winter holiday, which we've just had.
It might have been one of
those. So chances are it was also one of those. There's also a, they make, it's kind of like Call of Duty in the fact that there's a studio pumping out these Danish films. One's called Far Till Fear and the other one's called something else, but they make one alternate in every year.
Ah,
for this,
they like
period
Call of Duty.
Time. Yes. What was it called? This one... It's My Sister's Family, or my sister's Children, and
right.
Min Soster's Born. Yeah.
Okay.
My Sister's Children is the other one of Far
This is a
Fear.
Live action series, isn't it?
It is,
an animated,
yes,
film.
Oh, there's also Night of the Museum and SpongeBob, so hopefully
they'll
oh,
yeah,
watch,
okay,
SpongeBob. Also, Penguins of Madagascar is also out. And Paddington. A lot of kids' films in the cinema.
There's loads. There's a load more coming out as well.
Also, Whiplash. That.
That's out now?
Yes, it is out.
Ah, need to see that.
Mara has seen it. Said it's okay.
I watched the trailer. It's all full of blood and drumsticks.
Yeah, but
and blood and shouting and more blood and more drumming.
Well, it seems to kind of go along this idea of raising the question if... like kind of torturing someone to do something, if they produce good results in the end, is actually a valid thing. It's kind of being compared to Rocky and this kind of like, you know, overcoming great obstacles to achieve something brilliant.
See that from the trailer, the guy's, it's like, he's got a trainer, hasn't he? The guy who's learning,
yes,
to drum, and he's very, I can't remember, is it Mickey?
Yeah.
Ever been quite as.
Yeah, but Mickey wasn't an asshole. That's, yeah, what I'm saying. Like, it's been compared to that, but it's been, from what I've read articles on it, it's kind of raised the question of, like, would this guy not have also been talented if you weren't a total asshole for him for most of his life? You know, like, it's, yeah, kind of raising that question of, well, how much is too much to coax someone to be successful.
It sounds like an interesting watch.
It does. I haven't seen it, however, so I can't comment, but. Here it's okay.
But yes, Song of the Sea is an animated film and it's very beautiful. It's very illustrative in its,
yes,
style. And
it did look very nice in the trailer I saw.
There's a very nice atmosphere about it. It's very endearing, magical and emotional.
Yes.
With a few shades of Ghibli in there. It's
Not 50 Shades of Ghibli.
No. It's done by the same studio who did another film, Secret of Kells, actually.
Yes.
And that was influenced by Irish folklore. And so is this one.
It is
as
indeed,
well,
yes.
So go and check it out. It's a shame that I guess... I don't think it's actually out in the UK till it's summer.
No, I believe it is. I'm pretty sure it's out.
Oh, okay.
I think this is a reactive move from the Danish film board to get this into the
this film
cinemas
was,
after it got Oscar nominated. Yes.
By Danish... part funded by a Danish organisation.
Oh,
so I
really?
Think that's why it's here
but
in Denmark.
This film did not come out and it only has a limited release. It's only in the cinema this week because of the Oscars. Same way Birdman was only kind of really brought out to you because of the Oscars.
Really? It's up for an animated film Oscar?
It is up for an animated film Oscar.
That's a strong possibility.
Possibly, yeah.
It's going to get that. But let's move on. We're talking about games. Cause
video games.
Video,
yeah,
games. And what, Matthew, have you been playing this week?
Not a lot. I played a bit of Hammering Harry, which I have mentioned previously in regards to the biographic. That's a really good movie. Really good movie.
Oh,
it's infected my brain.
We haven't moved on. This is a bad idea, wasn't it? To
it
mix
was.
Movies into
oh,
mix.
God. We shouldn't have crossed the streams. No, it was a really good game. I've very much enjoyed Hammering Harry. It's been one of my favourites since I picked it up. God, it's been a couple of months I've sat onto that game and kind of gone, well, this is one of the jewels in the crown of the Game Boy library.
And
so
you pulled out your crack and put it in your Game Boy.
I did, yeah. I pulled it out of my folder, I threw it in there, and then recorded a video. The rest is history, as they say. Very good side-scrolling beat-em-up slash platformer, kind of like Mega Man, but instead of shooting things, you have a hammer. And, essentially your girlfriend gets nabbed by this weird machine that's breeding ghosts. It's called Building Company in the European release, but it's called Breeding Company in Japan.
Ghost Breeding
Company. Ghost Breeding Company.
The idea of breeding ghosts, that's such a far-out concept, isn't it? How can they breed when they're dead?
Yeah, well, there's these weird heart things that I guess are kind of summoning spirits, because after the end credits, you see these weird heart things come down from the ceiling and then shake above a load of rubble and then go start flying out of the rubble.
So you've got a construction worker fighting ghosts.
You have.
Is that right?
Pretty much. The series has two games previous from this. One was an arcade game and one was a port to the Nintendo Entertainment System, which was released in the good old European continent. It, for some reason, these games completely skipped by America.
Yeah. Has it got a Famicom?
It has got a Famicom version. There's actually two of them on the Famicom, though I hear the second Famicom one isn't as good as the first. This game is actually developed by a company called Tamtex as well, who didn't really work on a lot other than just ports of IREM games. They were originally IREM developer, and then they kind of handled some of their arcade ports to the NES. Mm. And they did a really good job of it. Like, from what I can see, the second Hammerin' Harry game on the Game Boy came out, but it wasn't by them. It was directly by IREM, and it doesn't really look as good as this one did. So, originally, in the first two, the NES and the arcade one, you're a construction worker, and for some reason, some rival construction company comes and breaks down your house. You're actually a carpenter, but you work for a construction company, and they come and break down your house, and then you go to kick ass and take names as a response to this. In this one, you are just happen to be walking with your girlfriend, like I said, and then she gets abducted by a ghost, and so you go and kick ass and get your girlfriend back. Second one, weirdly enough, it kind of is directly linked to this one in the fact that at the end of the Game Boy game, you're cornered and you jump on a rocket ship and you fly a rocket ship into space, which is the credits. You guys flying through space and all the credits come up on the side. And so the second one actually takes place in space with you fighting loads of robots and stuff, and it actually looks pretty cool.
Ooh.
I think that's got like a robot factory thing in its
name.
That
sounds nice. Now, what's the name of the series in Japan? Do you know? Hammering doesn't...
It's Daiku no Gensan, I believe.
God. I don't think I can spell that.
D-A-I-K-U.
D-A-I-K-U-N-O.
G, space, obviously. G-E-N.
E-N.
Dash.
We're spelling for you here.
S-A-N.
Ah, Gensan. Ah, yes, I see something here. This looks like the PSP game.
Yes, there is. There was a PSP game of it released called Hammering Heroes in the West and in also the States, I believe. I don't think they changed the name of it.
And there
which
it
I
is.
Hear is very good.
Yeah,
I'm actually kind of looking forward to getting that now. I really want to get... There's four games in total on the Game Boy. There's Daiku no Gensan 1, which is Hammering Harry, the game I recorded a playthrough of. 2, which is the one, like I said, going to space. And then there's a quiz, which is just a quiz game, but themed with Hammering Harry sprites, which seems a bit odd, which obviously would be unplayable to someone who doesn't read Japanese. And then there's a pachinko game, because Hammering Harry kind of became associated with pachinko machines, which is a big thing in Japan.
And here is the affordable Japanese version.
You can either pay 60, 70 quid for a European card, or you can pay £5 for a Japanese copy of the game.
What about this one? It's the Super Famicom one.
There is the Super Famicom one. That is Daiku no Gensan 3, which I hear is okay. I haven't played it. I played the Game Boy ones quickly, and I had a quick go with the NES one on an emulator.
I hear they all are Hammering Harry for the Famicom as well.
Yeah.
And the Game Boy Color.
The Game Boy Color one's supposed to be not too bad. I haven't played it, but I hear good things.
Wow.
But again, that's not handled by IREM. That's some other company.
Figures.
Yes.
You can get the whole Hammering, the whole franchise here.
There is.
To discover.
That's the quiz, which looks very exciting when you actually look at that cart. Okay. It's like Harry looking kind of cool with a hammer behind his back on a psychedelic background. Yeah, it is a whole franchise. It is. That's the pachinko game.
Okay,
yeah. Which I won't actually buy. Yeah, it is a full franchise, and it's kind of surprising how big it seems to be in Japan, but doesn't really get any props in the West because a lot of it wasn't released. Same with the series behind Maru's Mission, which is another Game Boy game I'm hopefully going to be covering very soon. There's also a game in that series called Ninja Taro, which kind of plays a lot like Zelda. But they didn't get released in Europe, those two at least. And then there's like 20 or 30 games in the series in Japan. Like, it's a really big series in Japan that didn't really get any props in the West. which is a shame.
Yeah.
By Jalco. So, you know, it's going to be quality.
Of course.
Like rival turf.
Anything else this week, Matthew?
You've been playing a lot of stuff, I think, in comparison to me.
A lot of stuff. I don't know about a lot. I've certainly picked up a couple of games this last week, and I've been enjoying both. First would be Tomb Raider Anniversary as a digital download for the Xbox 360.
I saw you playing this. Is this actually a remake of the first one?
It is, and this game was first released back on the PS2. And I actually own that version of the game.
I do not own that version of the game.
This one is... I'm not sure if it's very HD-ized.
Well, like, there was definitely...
It definitely looks like a PlayStation game because it's got that glow and those not very crisp edges to it.
I will say this to you, though, as someone who played that version of Tomb Raider to death, the original PS1 one, that is a vast, vast improvement on the PS1
game. Oh, I know,
game.
It's certainly on the original Tomb Raider, but I'm talking about the comparison between the PS2 version of this anniversary game and this Xbox 360.
Well, I assume they just
supposed
kind of
HD remake.
Yeah, but I mean, HD is a very loose term
it
these
is.
Days, isn't
it? It looks fine. You know, and also I would rather play it on an Xbox through a HDMI cable to the right ratio of widescreen television and such. Even I'm not sure first game if the PS2 version does play in, you know, widescreen scale up, but it probably looks a little sharper, I think it's easy to say, on the Xbox 360. It's great. It's very reminiscent of Prince of Persia. You know, it's like a mashup of the original Tomb Raider and Prince of Persia. I think in there's a lot more jumping around than I remember from Tomb Raider. There's a lot more hanging off ledges and such.
There's a lot of climbing mechanics in that game from what I remember.
Leaping from wall to wall, and I can't remember Lara doing that much. I remember jumping in the original Tomb Raider being very cumbersome and how you had to kind of use the walk button to walk to the edge of a platform, tap a couple of times backwards for a run up.
A bit in the first level that I really had trouble with when I was a kid, and when I got over that bit, then I was fine. But for some reason, I could never make the jump. There's a big pit. It's kind of the first big jump you ever come to in that game. And at the bottom of the pit, there's a bear.
Yeah, the
you
bear.
Just kill two wolves, and then you go to this pit where the bear is.
You can fall and fight the bear.
You can fall and fight the bear. Yeah. However, then you have to go back around and attempt the jump again.
I think in this one, you can climb a rope or something.
Ah.
There are little changes like that. There's also this weird kind of... And if an enemy's going to do a rage attack, I've only seen the bears do this so far, that you have a split second to use a special kind of dodge. And if you dodge out of the way of the rage attack, you then get some kind of bullet time moment where you can shoot it in the head.
Okay.
It's kind of unnecessary and you don't really need to use it. And most time I found the bear kind of managing to whack me before I had a chance to initiate the attack.
Because the bears in that game are very, very hard to kill, especially with the pistols.
Mm. Yeah, and that's still the same, this one. One little nickel was that the enemies tend to get stuck on things. It can work to your advantage a lot of times. You find the wolf will get stuck on a wall, so you just can stand there and shoot
it. I can't remember that happening with the original, though.
No, I can't either. That, so far, has been the only real flaw, I think, in this game so far, because I've really been enjoying it. I love the atmosphere of the original Tomb Raider. It's very quiet. And the original soundtrack also was quite nice. It reminded me... That's a nice theme.
Yes.
It doesn't play enough for my liking, because you can't go into the submenu and it play there. Because I think it normally did. When you brought the passport, it would play... You kind of just bring up, press back, and it brings up the menu. But it's all very user-friendly. Lara moves as she does in games like Tomb Raider Legend.
Okay.
It's using the same engine, I think, as Legend. So it makes the whole experience a lot more smoother.
So there's a bit of fluidity.
There's a lot of fluidity.
She is not as movement-based as she was in the PS1 game, where she moved like you were pushing a block around in Zelda.
Yeah, and you can push the blocks at any angle in this one as well. So you can't just push forward and left and right. You can drag it and pull it around. And all those little niggles that you had with the original Tomb Raider have been ironed out. Whether or not the gameplay experience is as pure and exact to the original, probably not, because there have been some alterations. But these alterations, I find, are fun. And if you do like Prince of Persia jumping around, then you're definitely going to get a kick out of this, because it's got plenty of it. and it looks nice for the most part. So for £3 something, I'm getting a lot of enjoyment out of it. I find it very plain sailing through. I think the progression has been made easier through these alterations to both the controls and how the levels are designed.
Yes.
So pick it up. It's on the sale at the minute, £3. You can do far worse.
I'm sure that's probably the price of the PlayStation 1 Classic version if it's on the PS3 and 4 as well. So, I mean, why not? If you have the 360, why not treat yourself to that?
Yeah, I think Tomb Raider still stands up pretty well to this day, especially with the alterations.
Yeah, and I mean, especially with the alterations, it's actually going to hold up. Because, I mean...
Yeah, if they hadn't have remade Tomb Raider at that point...
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it would have changed anything, but
well, no, what I mean, like
it keeps that game, it's keeping that game alive, it that is. Original game.
And this is something I feel that isn't really given a lot of credit to with HD remakes, like Resident Evil, for example, when they did the RE make on the GameCube. Yeah. That game, not only does it look beautiful, but like go back and play that first Resident Evil, be it the Resident Evil or the Director's Cut, it's fucking clunky, the controls, like they're very, very early 3D games, and they don't hold up as well as you'd probably think.
Yeah, do you think the GameCube version managed to iron out the kinks in that game?
I think there's a lot of things still with like item management that they should have kind of probably ditched.
They should have done more to make the experience a bit more friendly, you think?
They could have.
But then it's a difficult balance to say, do you want to deliver the same game that people remember, or do you want to mess with it?
Yes, exactly.
It's a minefield, because some people are going to be happy, others aren't.
Playing that and then playing Resident Evil 2, which I also did on the GameCube again, there's definitely a noticeable difference in the ease of controls. Mm. Like, it makes more sense, and yeah, it's just a better experience for my money. Like, there's a lot more like hints you find around the world that if you read, you actually find out what the hell you're supposed to be doing rather than the kind of guesswork of a LucasArts game that kind of went into the original. So,
and very current, you should talk about Resident Evil as well, because that remake
has
recently
just been released,
re-released again.
Yes.
For those who can't get enough or never got to play the GameCube version, which were probably a fair few people.
Well, I would imagine a lot of people getting these consoles now would not have. And again, I think it's a bit of a shame that people who have played Resident Evil 4, 5 and 6 now won't be used to the item management, and it kind of feels a bit cumbersome.
Mm.
Like, I tried to play Resident Evil Remake not long before I moved back to Denmark, and I thought, oh God. Remembering where you put things, the fact that you need ink ribbons to save, and there's just things in it that, while yes, I understand that they were trying to limit you in the old days and make it suspenseful and all of this nonsense, by today's standards of you wanting to get in and get out and play a game, it just makes things very cumbersome.
Mm.
There's options in that game, like, I don't know how anyone ever played that game as Chris and completed it, because, like, you need that fucking gun, because using the knife in that game is terrible, so you need to play as Jill, because not only has she got a gun, she's got more inventory space. Like, playing as Chris is a complete disadvantage. I
guess it was for a more hardcore challenge, perhaps?
Perhaps, but...
I'm not incredibly familiar with the original Resident Evil, I have to admit. I've played it, I played both the original and the remake, but I've never ever got very far.
From what I remember, may be incorrect. I think maybe Chris has got more item space, but he hasn't got a gun.
Okay, it's been a while, I think, both of us. Maybe once that game, £3, I might pick it up. Yeah. But I wouldn't pick it up at the prices at the minute. I think it's about £15.
Yeah, and when I have the GameCube one, there's not really been that much done to it.
Although it's always nice to be able to play everything on the HDTV.
Well, this is the thing. Like, with the GameCube one, a lot of those environments were pre-rendered. They're just JPEGs in that game. In this one, I believe they've actually kind of remodeled a lot of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's actually there now.
Okay, that sounds intriguing.
Yeah, I know the lighting and stuff is actually dynamic lighting now, whereas it was just a few rendered frames of... pre-rendered stuff. That's why it looked so nice on the GameCube.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe it'd be interesting to check out from like a technical standpoint, but it's a very good game. If you haven't played it, I would heartily recommend going out your way to get it.
Okay.
Just be prepared for the item management thing to be a pain in the ass.
I've also been playing Qbert this week.
I saw this.
This was on discount again for about £3 mark on the PlayStation Network store. This is Qbert Rebooted, which I've never owned Qbert. And I've never actually played Qbert, believe it or not.
I've played Qbert, and I was trying to think where I'd played Qbert, because you were doing it there.
Mm.
I think the only place I've played Qbert is on a multi-cart for the Game Boy. Like,
okay.
I can't remember playing it or anything else, but I know I've definitely never owned it, or at least I don't think I have. Is it on like a classic collection on the PS2 or something like
that? There was a re-release on the PS1. I remember that.
Definitely wasn't that.
But it could be included on some sort of compilation on PS2. I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, Qbert translates pretty well onto the into a modern game, as Qbert Rebooted tries to attempt to do. But what it also does is it adds loads of unnecessary things, like extra menu screens, like a overhead map and such, which for an arcade game isn't necessary. And with the game's load times, it doesn't help matters. You want a quick experience when you play
yes.
a game like Qbert. You just want to be able to go from level to level, not after a level 3 stages, complete a level, then go load up a map screen just to press X straight away to go on to the next
yes,
world.
It did seem very cumbersome.
Yeah, that was a shame. As I mentioned, the game includes the original Qbert, which is still a good game. It's definitely harder than the rebooted version, but it is an arcade game, so that's to be expected. What I found, though, is the PlayStation 3's analog sticks don't really go very well with the classic Qbert. They don't feel very accurate. I had to use the digital D-pad controls.
Yeah.
Which is still... You're always moving at an angle in Qbert, which is never ideal, really.
No.
Because you haven't got a diagonal on that controller.
Yeah.
So you have to press the two buttons down at the same time.
It's almost as if it was made for some kind of arcade stick,
yes,
right?
Yes, almost. But then the analog stick never feels very accurate.
No.
Even in the rebooted version, where it works better, I still found myself falling out of the level far too many times.
Yeah, I would see jump out and die a couple
yeah,
of times.
My errors were my own fault more than anything else. But I also think at the same time, because it's not very definite, the PS3 controller, as to when you actually have a diagonal. So, but that wasn't game breaking for me. It was causing some minor frustrations, as were the load times. But Qbert is a classic game. It's a very simple concept. I'm sure most people listening to this will probably know what Qbert is.
Yes.
He's a little orange guy, two legs, fine little snout, says something about caviar when he dies.
He does. you may have seen him in that movie Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah. He's probably introduced to a whole new generation of people through that film.
Said,
actually,
what the fuck is that funny orange thing? And then never paid any attention to it again.
But Qbert jumps around on blocks and tries to change the colour of all the blocks to a set colour.
Has that wonderful isometric kind of view that a lot of those early arcade games did, like Atari's Crystal Castles, to try and replicate the idea of 3D. And it looks nice.
Yeah, and Qbert has a little bit of trouble there because he's got little creatures who are trying to mess things up for him.
Yes, he does.
You've got snakes, which will kill you if you hit them. And you've got these little blobby guys who jump around and change the colour that you've been changing to the
opposite colour.
The opposite colour back to the other colour it started as. It's a little bit like Hotel Mario, actually, on the CDI in that respect, where you have to close all the doors in the hotel and then the enemies are opening the doors again. So the idea is you close them all. To make a comparison. Often I think Hotel Mario gets mentioned, especially on in comparison to Qbert. But
probably not,
go.
No.
Anyway, Qbert's a good game. Pick it up. It's cheap. If you've never played it and you don't own it,
I'm still missing it on the Game Boy, and I will have to pick it up soon after you playing it, because I really want to play it again.
It's available on PS3. I'm not sure if it's available on Xbox, actually. I don't think it is. I think Sony have some license.
They do indeed. Didn't seem like it was from what I just saw of the re-releases. Yeah. I actually think I played that game in the arcade in EGX.
The original.
Yes, Qbert. The original Qbert.
Yeah. You probably did. But I know it's available on PC, on Steam. So you can pick it up there.
There's also a port of it for the Atari 2600, but I can't remember if that's a good port or if it's a Pac-Man styled port of being a terrible game.
Well, as I mentioned before, you can get it on PS1 as well, Qbert. That'd be my main plays this week. I don't think I've actually played anything else.
I picked up one or two things. Like I got one or two Game Boy games, new ones. I got a surprise hit that I was telling you about yesterday called Megalit, which I will probably do a biographic on this week. Seemed pretty simple enough. From looking at the box art, it kind of looks a little bit like some kind of weird sword and sorcery RPG, but it's actually a puzzle game, and the sprite kind of reminds me a bit of a mashup between the ghost from Bubble Ghost and Kirby. It's just kind of this little ball with a little face on it. And you just pull blocks around. Like there's a grid of blocks, so you can see the height of the blocks you're currently pulling, and you just need to make them all touch the floor. And you do this by clicking B to drag, and then you press B again to let go of it, and then you press A to jump. However, you can only jump two blocks high, and you cannot let a block drop more than two blocks, otherwise the block will smash and the level will end and you lose a life. Which creates some very, very weird decisions. And I've played through the first two worlds of six in quest mode, where there's a little bit of a story. So that's where the sword and sorcery thing comes from, that some guy's kidnapped a woman and you've been turned into this blob and you're trying to save her. But there you have a time limit and lives. And from what I've seen online, just kind of glancing at the game before I started playing it, there seem to be very many ways to tackle the problems, because you are relying on your ability to stack blocks and do these other things. You can't lift and throw them. You need to make sure that a block falls onto another block as a cushion so it doesn't break, and climb on top of other blocks while some blocks are kind of hovering on the edge and this kind of thing. It's very interesting. It's a very unique game. I don't think I've really played anything like it. But yeah, I've been playing a bit of that. I played a bit of Stargate, which I was expecting
Stargate? To be... Based on the movie?
Yes, based on the film of the same name. I was expecting it to be a platformer of some kind, some weird puzzle game where tiles fly into like a 3D environment. I haven't really got the gist of it. I turned it on and I was like, well, that's a lot of shit, especially after playing Megalith.
That reminds me of that terrible Superman puzzle game that's on the Game Boy Advance.
Yes, it's kind of a similar thing to that.
A movie tie-in to Superman Returns, but it's
it's called Fortress of Solitude. I believe I have that game boxed. Yeah, that's a piece of shit. But I looked at Stargate, I was like, okay, this isn't for me. Like, especially after playing a good, solid puzzle game like Megalith for a while. Yeah. I was like, okay, pass on that.
You didn't think about playing The Lion King?
I haven't yet. I need to play The Lion King. I actually declared aloud on last week's podcast that I was going to play The Lion King, but unfortunately, after the thing died, it was like, okay, I'm just going to go back and play Hammer and Harry.
And the relevance of that was the fact that, well, I was off sick, as Matt was last week.
Yes, you watched The Lion King.
I watched The Lion King. What a fantastic movie. Whatever Matthew Boyle says after this, let it be known that I think Lion King is a classic film, and I'd say it's very close to a perfect 10.
I think it's a very overrated Disney film, and there are a lot better examples of great Disney films than The Lion King.
And if you agree with Matthew, or let us know, if you also think The Lion King is probably one of the best of Disney's back catalogue, then also let us know.
At TMAcast on Twitter or Facebook.com/TomAndMattAttack.
And what do you think of the games too? Because I really enjoy the math system version of it.
No, this is a totally separate argument. I think that the games of The Lion King are brilliant.
However, I think it does
because it's very stylistic. And don't get me wrong, the quality of the animation and the whole mood it creates is very nice. However, I think the end of that film is very rushed, and it kind of lets that film down for me as a result.
Fair enough. I beg to differ, but...
Each to his own.
I think it's very well paced, actually.
I think it's very well paced up until the point he meets Nala, and then it feels very rushed because it has to be an hour and a half. Adult Nala, yes. If there had been another 15 minutes for them to kind of pace that film out, and it hadn't been such a cookie cutter 90 minutes.
If it had been 15 minutes more, it would have been too long.
I don't think so.
I think it's too long.
I think that ending's too rushed.
I think the good thing about Lion King is it doesn't overstay its welcome.
I think they should have got to either Mufasa dying quicker or they should have got.
Oh, this is a heated debate here.
It is.
We'd love you to get involved.
But it's let's be clear, it's not a terrible movie. It's not Hunchback of Notre Dame, which is the worst Disney film ever made.
And I beg to differ again. That's one of my favourite ones too.
Oh, God. Stylistically, yes. Everything else, fuck that movie, is terrible. So I didn't play The Lion King. I really need to. I really liked the Super NES / Mega Drive game of it.
Yeah, so. I found that one too hard. I found the I Wanna Be King.
Yeah, just
segment.
Can't wait to be king level. It's very, very hard.
Really hard. I just can't wait, isn't it? I just want to be king. I just can't wait to be king. Some really annoying ostriches, I remember.
Yes, going back and forth.
Very.
You have to time those jumps perfectly. I really like it.
Whereas the Master System version, I think, was a much more balanced game.
Okay, fair enough.
I'd love to play your Game Boy copy.
Yes, I...
May I?
You may. Thank you. I actually have a spare copy that in work you can have.
Oh, great.
Yeah, no worries. Yes. I played a bit of Megalith. I played Stargate. I got a copy of Pinball Deluxe, which is simply Pinball Fantasies and Pinball Dreams, two very early Game Boy pinball games.
It sounds sexy. Is it sexy?
They're based on old Amiga and Spectrum ones. They're by a British company who made pinball games. Huh. And they're okay. Like, Pinball Dreams wasn't very good. It's regarded as probably being the worst of the many pinball games on the system. Pinball Fantasies is all right, and this kind of uses the improvements from Pinball Fantasies and applies them to Pinball Dreams, so it's okay. I'm not really that big onto virtual pinball. Like, I liked True Pinball on the PS1, but who didn't? Come on, guys. I like Kirby's Pinball and Revenge of the Gator. And for me, the HAL Labs pinball games are better than these ones. So,
yeah, Kiss Pinball's not so good.
No, it's not. Nothing to do with it being themed by Kiss, but very disappointing that there's no Kiss music in the Kiss Pinball game.
We must have talked about it on a previous podcast.
I think we have. And I got another game. Oh, I got Toy Story as well.
For the Game Boy?
Yes.
Original Game Boy? Is it Toy Story?
Yes.
Was developed by Traveller's Tales, like the Mega Drive
one? I'm not too sure. I kind of hope not.
The Mega Drive one was quite unique, actually, because you had to... Remind me of Clockwork Knight. You go around finding things, don't you?
You do.
It's not straightforward left to right. Oh, we talked about other things. Talking about Toy Story. Last week, we missed out on Automat Toy Story 3 on the Xbox 360.
You were indeed, yes. This version of Toy Story does remind me a lot. It is trying to emulate the Genesis
Mega Drive
/ Mega Drive game. However, it really shouldn't have tried to emulate a game on a 16-bit system. It's not very good.
What about Toy Story racing game? That was really good.
I'll show you a screen grab of Toy Story.
Matt will show me. Obviously, you can't see
this.
It looks like the Mega Drive game.
It is trying to be the Mega Drive game.
It looks just like it. Just greyer.
However, it plays very clunky. The animation is nowhere near as smooth as the Mega Drive game. And I don't know, I just didn't really like it. It kind of reminded me a lot of, and I will be interested to see, if Disney Interactive actually developed this version of it, or at least that's the name on the front of the box.
It will have been stamped
so
on there,
I assume it is. Yeah, I assume it's published by them and developed by someone else, which I shall see on Game FAQs. But it's Blue Pearl, or Black Pearl, I think, are the developer.
Okay, so they ported it to the Game Boy.
They did indeed, and they ported it, and I would argue that they didn't really do a great job. It was me kind of just throwing it in and playing it a little bit and then going, oh, okay, this isn't the best game. I can't see if it's them, but I'm pretty sure from what I can see.
The Genesis and SNES version of the game are largely identical, first of all. Yeah, the Genesis version has an extra level, the SNES version doesn't. In which Woody rides RC.
Yes.
The PC version identical to the Genesis version, apart from having a level missing. Due to the limitation of the cartridge, the Game Boy version is the shortest out of all the versions of the game, with only 10 levels, and is in grayscales. Of course it is. So that's a little bit of... But Toy Story 3 on the 360, rather nice.
Yes, I'm actually looking at the company's backlog of what they ported over. A lot of sports games, actually. They did actually develop Total Carnage on the Super Nintendo.
Tier Text Design Studios apparently handled the Game Boy version.
It's them / Blackpool is the what it says on Game FAQs. Okay.
They also handled the port of Pocahontas and your favourite, Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah, this is literally the same developer, I think. I think maybe they were going under a different name at the time.
They did Toy Story 2 for the Game Boy Color. They did Small Soldiers for the Game Boy. Bug's Life. Notoriously bad Game Boy Color game of Bug's Life.
I will point out that, like I said to you, it feels exactly like Small Soldiers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of truth to that because I think they've just reused the same engine they created to make Small Soldiers. Because Small Soldiers is not a good Game Boy game, despite being quite rare and sought after completing box. They also did Shaq Fu for the Game Boy, which is quite a rare game. They did Madden 96.
They did Toy Story Racer.
Ooh, now that was an interesting game. I got that off somebody in work. I bought it through a system.
A Traveller's Tales of the PlayStation version,
yes. That's interesting. Maybe they had some kind of cahoots.
Because it does some amazing 3D for a Game Boy.
It does, yes. Not that fun to play from what I remember.
Oh, no, it wasn't that fun. But technically
very
impressive.
Technically very impressive. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say about it. It was a scaled-down version of the Genesis game. It didn't play very well. Kind of annoyed me a little bit. But it's quite a sought-after cart, and 25 kroner, I think, I paid for each of them. I couldn't really pass it up. And then I got a copy of Olympic Summer Games, ironically also developed by Blackpool, and a copy of Bubble Ghost, which I then upgraded my copy because I had a USA label and I wanted a Scandinavian one because they were 50 kroner for both of them posted. So I said, why the devil not?
Oh, so still very much into the Game Boy.
Yes, still very much into the Game Boy. Well, this brings me on to something I kind of want to discuss in this week's podcast.
Go for it.
As we've previously mentioned on the podcast, I will be leaving the Tom and Matt Shack. Don't worry, that does not mean that this podcast will not continue. But I was packing up a lot of my games yesterday, which has now left a rather blank shelf in our living room. And it's been something I've been noticing a lot with collectors. I frequent many collecting boards such as Retro Collect and Nintendo Age. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be a trend of people selling their collections. And I was kind of putting a lot of this stuff in a box yesterday. And there are a lot of games in there that I really liked, such as I have a copy of Ico, I have a copy of Shadow of the Colossus and Okami, and these other great games that I really want to play.
For the PS2.
I also have a mountain of Xbox 360 games, some Wii games and Wii U games. I was just kind of looking at a lot of them going like, well, this is very nice that I own Tales of Vesperia and Magna Carta 2 and JRPGs that are 50, 60 hours plus of gameplay, but I don't think I'm ever going to play them. I kind of got to this realisation yesterday.
But you used to just buy them regardless, yes?
I did, yes. I used to buy them because I collected JRPGs. Mm. And I don't know if I want to keep a lot of them. Kind of got to that weird realization yesterday that this is just kind of stuff on a shelf. And
always a danger with big games like that, that you might not necessarily get around to playing them.
It is, and I was pulling off my DS games as well, which are all JRPGs, and I was looking at the prices I'd paid for them. I was kind of like, I paid 30 quid for this game and I never played it.
I'm growing up, I'm thinking about moving into my own place, thinking about all those responsibilities and bills and maybe realising that video games maybe aren't as important to you now as they used to be.
Possibly not. Not to say that I don't enjoy playing games, and this by no means means I'm going to start not collecting Game Boy games. At least I'm still going to see my collection of Game Boy games through. And my Super Nintendo collection, my NES collection, and, well, generally my Nintendo games, like, are cherry picks. They are the best of the best of those consoles, and they are games that I've held on to for a very, very long time, which I will not give up.
What are you going to do with your Flintstones on the PS2?
I don't really care. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just kind of got to that point yesterday. I was like, yeah, I've got a lot of really, really nice PS2 games.
Not that one.
Not that one. No, that was a clunky game. But I was just looking at someone. I was like, oh, I don't fucking need these games. Like,
but what will you do with them?
I don't know. That's what I'm kind of thinking. And like, kind of made me a bit sad that as soon as I kind of said this on Twitter, I had 8 million people going like, I'll buy them. And I was like, oh.
Then you rethought that. And thought, oh, maybe I don't want to sell them.
Yeah, but like, it just kind
maybe just now say, I don't think I'll buy as many games anymore. I've got all these ones I haven't played yet. But then again, you say you don't have any interest in playing them.
Well, no, it's not so much I haven't got an interest in playing them. Like, I think I'm just going to start going back to what I originally did. Like, my Game Boy games I'm going to keep buying because the history and playing those games and going, okay, this is an absolute corker of a game. It's like Megalith. Like, the reason I started buying Game Boy games is I'd buy them and go, wow, that's a fucking really good game that no one's heard of. Like, Hammer and Harry, all of the responses I've had so far in the last day and a half, I've just been up as like, wow, this looks like a really cool game. Mm. I've never heard of it, and it looks amazing. There are those games on that system. Like, I was looking through the last 150 or so games I need to complete the Game Boy library, and there are a lot of Game Boy games that I still really want to play. There's things like Tumble Pop, which is a port of a Data East arcade game. There is a Million Secret Castle, which looks like a very fun game. There's loads of these games I still want to play on the Game Boy. And I think why I started collecting it and why I said on the podcast I started collecting it is because I was kind of bored with modern consoles, because I kind of felt like I'd played a lot of these games before. Yes, the company were notorious for its poor conversions.
Sorry, we're still looking at
of Tiatrex. Tiatrex?
Tiatrex or Black Pearl. Sorry, yes.
Yeah, I just kind of got to this realization that, well, maybe I'm not going to, maybe I'll try and shift a load of my PS2 and Xbox games, these titles I've bought out of curiosity or perceived rarity that I've not really played, and just keep my cherry picks. Like, it's what I've done with them. The Super Nintendo, I've not really invested in anything for the Super Nintendo that I didn't know was an amazing game.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a huge back catalogue of Super Nintendo games myself, or even Mega Drive or Master System. I find with some of the older consoles, I have very few games. In fact, the Game Boy is the smallest games collection I own for the Game Boy, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I'm trying to think what I've got the most of. Probably PS2 games.
Well, obviously mine is Game Boy. I would wager that my Xbox 360 collection is a lot bigger than my PS2 collection. Not only the ones I have here, but I still have like 40, 50 titles in the UK. I have a lot of games for that system.
Mm.
And yeah, I just kind of like, well, looking at the ones even I still have at home in my mum and dad's, it's just like, they're here for a reason, and probably as much as I love Amp 3 and I really recommend people go out and play that game because it's fucking awesome, like, am I ever really going to put in Amp 3 again just to see the really nice stylized cutscenes?
I always think I might in those circumstances, but
do you know what I mean? Like,
I think it's different when I'm away from it all, because I'm not surrounded by it here in Denmark. A lot of my games still residing back in the UK.
Yes.
Yeah, but I have no urge to play them here in Denmark. I don't often think about an old Xbox game when I'm here and think, oh, I need to play that right now.
Yeah.
No. But I do actually have, I think, quite a good collection of older games that I do see myself eventually going back and playing. Well, games like Black on the original Xbox, I always rather enjoyed.
And this is the thing, I've bought a lot of these games because I've been very curious about them. Like we're talking about on the last podcast, not the one that got deleted. Like, I'd been playing through Ico, and I'm currently playing through Shadow of the Colossus.
Mm.
Like, these are fantastic games, and like games I really wish I would have played earlier, but I was so caught up in like current gen stuff and playing games like Call of Duty 2 on the Xbox 360 when that launched, that when I finally got
Peter
hold
Jackson's
of these games,
King Kong.
Peter Jackson's King Kong's for his 1,000 achievement points, that I didn't really stop to play these games. Like, I bought things like Okami when it first came out, and then I never did anything beyond that. I never played it.
I mean, I bought it
Yeah.
Hardly played it.
Yeah, like...
I even got the PS3 version when it was free on PlayStation Plus. It's just sitting on my hard drive, actually.
It's a shame. I think going forward, I'm going to buy less games.
Mm.
I 100% know that. I'm still going to keep buying Game Boy games. But I don't even know, really, if I want to buy modern games. Like, I was just kind of excited to play The Order, and then I watched the first 2 hours of it, which is practically half of the game. And then I saw something on Twitter earlier that kind of put the nail in the coffin. It's a 5.5 hour game, The Order, Tom.
Yeah.
And
it's just come out, exactly.
It has just come out. It's very short, very kind of sterile. And I saw that the last boss was QuickTime Events.
Oh,
which seems
no.
like the most lazy thing for a PS4 game to do. And I saw that it had been given 2 stars by Giant Bomb, which is the website whose opinions I can't trust. They also did the same for Kirby's, whatchamacallit, the new one.
Kirby, what, for the Wii U?
Yes.
Okay.
They said they loved Canvas Curse. Like, that is one of one of the people playing its favourite Kirby games. And he said this doesn't capture any of the magic of that game. He says it feels very bland and very linear in comparison to that game. And he said it just seems like they made a really nice engine and then not any gameplay to go on top of it.
Yeah. It's a shame. I still want to try it.
Like I said to you, I tried it and I wasn't that blown away. Mm. Like, I was much preferred playing Yoshi's Woolly World, but I would argue that's probably because it just played like Yoshi's Story, so...
The Order 1886 isn't a disaster, nor is it a particularly good game. It's a hollow diversion, entertaining, but outmodded and caught somewhere between a medium it repeatedly fumbles and one it fails to effectively embrace. That was Eurogame's summing up of
It's because it tries to be very cinematic. It tries to be a very narrative-driven game. It's so much so that it's even in widescreen format. It's in envelope.
It's like a movie.
It's like a movie, and they're trying to bill it as one. Because look at it. I mean, look at these images you've seen before. Yeah, it is a very pretty game. However, that does not a good game make, and they've gone for this very cinematic appeal with a, from what I can tell, a very lackluster story with very cool ideas behind it. Like, you can see conceptually it's a very polished idea and does loads of really cool things with this idea of, like, the court of King Arthur and all this kind of stuff, an Arthurian legend mixed in with, like, steampunk mentality. And then it doesn't really do anything with it. It's just a cover shooter.
But it's the most impressive visual showcase.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Like, watching the first 2 hours of it, it looks amazing. Yeah. But that's not enough to get me to spend £60 on a game.
Yeah, hopefully it's the beginning and of what we can expect. At least we know the PS4 can do that now, and it just needs to be wrapped up in a better game, maybe. I don't know. I've never played it, so I can't really comment. But that's one of the more recent releases. Evolve also came out.
It did.
A couple of weeks ago.
I hear that is quite fun, but I hear it's very short-lived. I hear it's like Titanfall. Another once you've kind of done all the stuff in it game. You can, then
you've been playing Majora's Mask, enjoying it?
I have been playing and enjoying Majora's Mask. Weird thing I noticed, I saw a few threads about it on Nintendo Age and then did a bit of investigatory journalism, as I do. I went on eBay and Amazon and checked the prices. For some reason, Ocarina of Time on the 3DS has, like, skyrocketed in value.
Oh my God, that's so cheap.
I got mine, I picked it out of the case earlier for 30 kroner.
Yep.
I paid for my copy of...
From Bilka?
Yes.
Yep.
It's gone, it's kind of like 45, 50 quid.
That's crazy.
Price mark. Crazy. Like, it's more than it was when it came out, because at least in America, they had a very small print run because it was around the time that Nintendo were trying to get everyone to make digital download purchases of Ocarina of Time. So they did it on a very small print run. And, yeah, as a result of that... It's now demanding a very high price. What's this you're looking at?
I'm looking at a game which is due to come out soon called A Good Snowman is Hard to Build.
Yes.
And I'm not sure what it is.
Looks very nice.
But it looks interesting. And it seems to be a puzzle game about rolling balls of snow to make snowmen.
Seems that way. With very limited amounts of snow, so you have to roll it up and then use as much of the area of snow as you can.
I've never... What was that quote? There was a quote for this. I have never wanted to hug a video game so badly in my life.
Who said that?
Nathan Grayson.
Don't know who that is.
Neither do I. Maybe he's related to Nathan Drake, but he can't be because his surname's different. He shares a first name.
Jesus Christ. Right.
That's out on the 25th of February, very soon, okay. Along with stuff like Oddworld New and Tasty on the PC and Mac. Obviously, it's already out. Resident Evil Revelations 2.
The episodic.
But they released it as a boxed
version.
Look at them all.
Is that already out then?
You think you can download it already? It's episodes.
It is episodic.
Yep. Well, it's going to be a box copy.
From what I believe, they're actually releasing it as a timed thing. So one episode of that was going to come out every week, and it's like a 2-hour-long game. Okay. That may already be out, Tom. You may want to investigate.
Maybe I didn't finish last one, but yeah. I don't know. I know very little about this and how and if it's very different from the first Revelation.
I believe so. I believe it's very stylistically the same as an old Resident Evil game, but it's coming in episodes, and I believe you play as Chris and Claire, maybe.
Claire, I think, is definitely in it. Dragon Ball Z Xenoverse is coming out on the 27th. It's a fighting game. I did a little bit of research on it, but you can make your own characters.
Yeah.
It's coming out on the first Dragon Ball Z game to be released on this current gen PS4.
Yeehaw!
You excited?
No, it's going to be the same shitty Dragon Ball Z fighting game.
I'm tempted to try it. I wouldn't be tempted to buy it. And yeah, other than that, February is a pretty dry month for video games.
Well, Dying Light is coming out, which we will be featuring this week on BlastProcess.com quite heavily. So check that out. The pre-mentioned Hammering Harry is kind of tying into that as well. So have a look, see at those. I actually really want to play this game, which we've completely
Sunless
ignored.
Sea.
Called
it's been
Sunless
out since
Sea.
The 6th of February.
Yes. Sunless Sea is a game set in...
It's essential, apparently.
It's a very good game. Essentially, what you are is you're a captain on a ship and you must go around this world in a roguelike way. It looks fantastic. I will show you after this podcast.
You're a game, give it 10 out of 10.
You're a little ship and you go around this map that's roguelike, so when you die, then it disappears. It's very lore-heavy. There was a Facebook/online browser game that if you scroll up, I'm sure it will tell you the name of, called London Below or something along those lines.
I'm not sure.
Oh god damn it,
in
I
the
wish 1800s I could remember the name.
London has fallen to the ground.
What is the echo? Oh damn it. Anyway, this is based on a browser game that came out. I'll have the word before the next podcast because I'm hopefully going to have played this before then. And you're in a ship and like you set a mission for yourself and you go around the ship and you can gain crew and stuff. It looks very interesting. It looks very unlike anything I've ever seen before. But kind of plays almost like a choose-your-own-adventure that a lot of the narrative is told by storybook things that you find and like your crew logs and stuff. Looks very interesting. I saw a quick look of it on giantbomb.com, which I'm going to show you after this podcast, and I will hopefully have played it by the next podcast.
Yes. Dead or Alive 5, final, last round. Terrible. Last round, final round would sound a bit better, wouldn't it? Last round?
Yes.
Final round. Sounds.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's Dead or Alive 5 again, third time round.
On the PS4,
it's the first
though.
One that's going to be on PS4 and Xbox One.
I might pick it up. It's £25. I don't know. I like Dead or Alive 5, but I think that ship has sailed me playing a lot of Dead or Alive 5. So we shall see.
There we go. Yeah. So that's everything that's kind of going on. Not everything, but that's some of what's going on in the current video game scene.
Yes, it is. And I guess that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. Again, sorry for there not being one last week. We will keep these up, even though I am moving on. This will probably be the last podcast in this flat, I guess.
Which makes it an emotional moment.
It does.
So Matthew, shall we raise our empty cups of tea and
we'll clink
the Tom and Matt Attack Shack for the final time?
Clinky clink. If you have liked this podcast, then don't worry, like you said, we'll keep going, at least for the near future. We shall see what happens. You can tell us on Twitter at TMAcast. You can also do so on facebook.com/TomAndMattAttack. Please be sure to check out blastprocess.com as well this week for the Dying Light Zombie Spectacular.
It's Zombie Week.
It is Zombie Week.
Over there on blastprocess.com.
You can also check out Boyographic, where I've uploaded that video of Hammering Harry, if that sparked your interest. And, yeah.
You can watch a video of me cooking, if you wish.
Oh, great, you can. If you search for Toodlebug 500, you can see a video of Tom cooking a pancake. I also make a guest appearance. Though I am very sleepy, and so I look a mess, and I kind of look like a bit of a weirdo, but hey, it happens.
Well, you've just got out of the wrestling ring.
Look like I just got out of the wrestling ring, because I'm wearing a big robe and a scarf indoors. Don't ask why. If you like this podcast, you can give it a cheeky rate and subscribe in iTunes. Tell some other people about it. You can also listen to it in Stitcher and at the pre-mentioned blastprocess.com, as well as tomamattack.com. Until next week, gamers, game on.
Game on.